Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, July 29th, 2017. This is episode 1408. Enjoy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and, you know, smartphones and smartwatches and Lenovo laptop computers and, I don't know, augmented reality, virtual reality. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can still reach us. All you have to do is use some sort of VoIP solution that lets you call phones. When are we going to get that for Google Home, the little Google doohickey, you know, that you talk to, like their version of the Echo? They said you were going to be able to call phones with it. And that would only be in the U.S. and Canada, so it's not much use since it won't work outside the U.S. and Canada. But that's going to be kind of cool, right? You can call a phone just by saying, okay, you know who, let's make a phone call. That's kind of cool. I love these talking doohickeys. They're stupid. They don't do much, but they're fun. And they give you, you know what? I think the reason that a certain crowd likes things like the Amazon Echo, because we want to be living in the future. We really do. And so we know, there, you know, HAL 9000 and 2001, that was 16 years ago. That didn't happen. Probably, I guess, though, you know, there was one thing when Dr. Floyd Haywood's on the moon. He makes a video call to his daughter. Guess we got that now. Still can't live on the moon, but we got that. We don't have evil robots that talk to you and play chess with you and lock you out of the spacecraft, however. We haven't got to that part yet. So I think Echo, you know, it can't do anything really damaging, right? I don't think. It's kind of fun. It's kind of makes us feel like we're in science fiction. Speaking of science fiction, you see this, the big hacker convention, DEF CON, is this weekend in Las Vegas. Actually, it was all this week in Las Vegas. Before that, Black Hat, which is the more corporate version of DEF CON. And the hackers come and they show stuff off. In the past years, we've always been a little nervous these weeks after DEF CON because we thought, all of these new flaws and exploits and hacks will be revealed to the world and we'll all be, you know, in trouble. But this year, there weren't a whole lot of them. And the reason everybody says is, well, you can make so much money now selling these to the government. Why would you hold on to them and show them to a bunch of unwashed hackers? No, make some money. But I do like one of these hacks, the Spark Fund, which is actually a great site. If you know, we often talk about makers and building robots and using Arduinos and Raspberry Pis to make interesting devices. Spark Fund's one of those sites where you can go and you can buy a lot of this stuff. They built a robot, partially 3D printed robot, and they put it in front of a Sentry safe, and they had 45-minute presentation, and the robot, yes, cracked the safe in around 30 minutes. So the robot, and by the way, they said this was specifically designed for these Sentry safes, which are widely used. You know, these are inexpensive safes you have in the house, probably. But they said, but we could modify it to work with other safes as well. It was able to look at the notches on the knob and reduce the million combinations down to just 1,000, and then it tries them all. That must be fun to watch. And it discovered the combination 51-36-93 and popped the safe open. And they said, we were really happy it opened up. So that's cool. Robot safe cracker. Probably not super practical. Thing's kind of big. Probably easier to just use a little explosive. So they didn't. This was not a safe they provided. They bought one new because they didn't want to travel with a safe anyway. The robot cost about $200 to put together, 3D printed parts, and I'm going to presume a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino or something in there. Could have been a iPod Nano. Those are out of work now. The Nano and the Shuffle, Apple unceremoniously cut the cord on them this week. Do you have a? You see them in gyms still all the time. The Shuffle was the iPod that didn't have any controls. That wasn't such a good idea. The Nano, though, is very popular with the screen, very small. I have a few lying around. They said, nope, we're not going to make them anymore. It's all iPod touches now, but we will increase the capacity. And the touch starts at $199. I can't imagine this is a big market anymore because most, you know, who I guess it's kids maybe? Don't most people have phones that have more capacity, more capability than an iPod? Yeah, I think so. Speaking of Apple, they have this is an interesting politically interesting challenge. The Chinese government has said that by February of 2018, it will be illegal to use what's called a VPN. People in China use these virtual private networks to get around censorship, the Great Firewall of China. China won't let you, for instance, use Facebook or Twitter, a lot of social media. They limit the news you can look at and so forth. And so people in China who have some technical sophistication have been able to get around that. Just as, you know, here we use VPNs to pretend we're in England so we can watch the BBC. There, they use VPNs to pretend they're anywhere but China just so they could see the full internet. Except in February, that's going away. And this week, Apple pulled all the VPN programs from the Chinese App Store. Now, on the one hand, you know, when a company does business in a country, they've got to adhere to the laws of the country, right? Sure you do. You know, we would expect if somebody, a company from, say, New Zealand was operating in the United States, that they would follow our laws. Actually, that's come up a little bit because Canada recently ordered that Google had to delete search results for a counterfeit website, a website that was counterfeiting products, not just in Canada, but all over the world. And Google went to the Ninth Circuit Court here in the U.S. for an injunction saying that we have different laws here. You know, we have the First Amendment here. Government can't tell us to censor websites, and so we don't want to do it. Setting up, I don't know what, where do you go? If you got the Supreme Court of Canada saying you have to, and then a court in the U.S. saying you don't, I don't know where you go. But this is a little simpler. You obey the laws of the country, except this is, you know, kind of the difficult end position that Apple's put themselves in by saying we're only going to allow apps that are in our store on an iPhone. We are going to control what's on the iPhone. We are the ultimate arbiters of what's on the iPhone. You can't get anything from anybody else. Sorry. That protects you, says Apple, except if you're in China, which means that it prevents you from using the open internet. And China, and obviously Apple could get around this by allowing iPhones to download apps that aren't in the App Store. Gets them off the hook, right? Well, it's not coming from us. These guys figured out how to get apps. But because they're in this interesting position where they say, no, you have to get stuff from us, now they have to obey the law in China and they have to participate in anti-democratic processes. Interesting, isn't it? This is actually well known. It's always the problem when you start to censor things. When do you stop? When you say, we're in charge, this is why Google doesn't want to censor this counterfeit site. Google does censor sites all the time. So it's kind of a slippery slope. We don't want to have to be responsible for policing the internet. That's not our job. Well, Apple says it is our job, and so they now have to pull all the VPNs from the store in China. Interesting political situation, isn't it? 8888-ASK Leah. Why don't you ring that number? Heather Hammond's answering the phones. She'll set you up, and we could talk about that or anything on your mind, anything having to do with tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. You call that number, guess who you're going to get? Earth, wind, and fire. No, you're going to get fire. You're going to get Heather Hammond, the phone rangers. You're boogieing down, huh?
That's a sweet jam.
Isn't that a great song? I love the way that begins.
Mm-hmm.
Every night in the rain.
Nailing it, Mr. LaForte.
Not really. I should probably not do that. Because I'm the tech guy, not the singing guy. You have been working hard all morning, lining up people for this show, making them ready, preparing them.
Yep.
And who's my first victim?
It's not your victim. It's your partner in crime, because now you're Mr. Save the World guy from Uh-oh. Fake news. Ken and Salina has a solution, he thinks.
Oh, wow. The intersection of technology and politics. This should be fun. Hi, hi, Ken. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather. What can I do? Let's talk. What can we do here to make fake news go away?
Well, I don't think
let me set the stage. What we're talking about, I think, particularly from a tech point of view, is the idea that there are people who want to make money. They're not particularly political, but they would like to make money by generating traffic to their sites. This is an old and well-known profession. Not the oldest. It's the oldest internet profession. And the way you do that, of course, to generate traffic is with what we call sometimes called link bait, a headline or a story that will get people to click on it. And then once you click on it, the way they make money is their websites are loaded with ads, and every view gets some money. And if you're a Macedonian teenager and there's really no, you know, the Burger King closed down, this is one way, and you have some web skills to make some money pretty easily. The problem is these guys are pretty good at creating, generating headlines that, generate traffic. And so they create headlines like, for instance, the one everybody uses as an example, the Pope endorses Donald Trump for president back during the election. It was a Macedonian website. It wasn't true, but it was the kind of thing that spread like wildfire. And a lot of people saw it and believed it. But really, the whole point was not to convince people to vote for Donald Trump at all. These kids didn't have any political agenda. They just wanted to make some money by you going to their website. So how do we fix this?
Well, what I propose would be a fact-checking engine running on the web that would be accessed by browser plugins, so that once you install this, every time you visit a website, that URL would be submitted to the engine, which would analyze the page sentence by sentence and return a code to the app that would change the color of the background.
Oh, make it like red or bilious green or something, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. If there's a false in there.
I'll tell you the problem. By the way, people are doing this. Google has already started doing this in Google News. They will, when they show a headline with something that they think is fake, they will show you some alternative points of view along the side. Everybody's trying to do something like this. Facebook has actually considered your proposal. Here's the problem. One man's fake news is another man's gospel truth. So I was very careful at limiting the definition of fake news to link-baity articles on sites that are created not to spread news but merely to make money. That definition I think we can agree on. But the problem is this whole thing has become politicized, and I'm not a fan of the word fake news. I'd prefer to just say let's get rid of link bait, because fake news is in the eye of the beholder in many cases. And I'll give you an example. If you're an atheist and the story is about God, you might say that's fake news. But there's plenty of believers, in fact, a majority of believers, who might say that's true news. And I don't know how you would justify it one way or the other. I don't know how you'd prove it one way or the other. And you can think of many, many examples of stories that one group of people might say, well, that's false. And one group of people might say, well, that's obviously true. Evolution is a good one. The battle's still being fought 200 years after Darwin, almost 200 years after Darwin wrote The Origin of Species. And many people would say that shouldn't be taught in the schools even. It's so fake. And many people would say teaching anything else would be fake. And we aren't going to agree on that. So I want to make sure if we really limit definition of fake news to link bait headlines designed to generate traffic to sites to make money. That, I think we can all agree, is a bad thing. And there's a lot of it, not just political. There's a lot of it, not just news. In fact, Facebook faced this a few years ago. Do you remember for a while on you'd go to Facebook and all you'd see is, this man has three eyes and you'll never believe what happened next, that kind of thing? In fact, there was a website called Upworthy that was created to take advantage of this. Many websites where Upworthy is the best known. At some point, Facebook said, this is out of control. And in fact, it's going to ruin our business because no one's going to come and look at their news feed if all you get is these dopey stories about a cat that had three puppies, and it's link bait. It isn't, it's not real news, or even if it is real news, it's designed not to, just to generate traffic for money. And so they change their, they call it the algorithm, the way they pick what's on the, you know that you don't, I bet you the majority of people believe that when they go to Facebook, what they're seeing is a chronological list of posts from friends and family, right? Sure, that's what you see. No. Facebook manages it to a pinpoint. And they know what you like, what you click on, what you pay attention to, and what you even look at longer than other things. And they manage your feed because their business is to get you on that site as much as possible, as long as possible, each and every day. So they manage that feed. So, in fact, you don't necessarily, you probably figured this out by now, see every post that your mom makes or your sister or your daughter makes. You'd like to. Maybe that's why you're on Facebook, but that's not what you see. So they're manipulating that algorithmically all the time using computers, and they can push a button. It's one of the reasons people are a little scared about Facebook. Facebook is the chief source of this fake news and link baits. Facebook and Google, Google search. Google also has for years, in fact, a good friend of mine named Matt Cutts was for years in charge of fighting spammy search results. Google calls it spam. Google says, you know, these are sites trying to get into the search rankings so they'll get traffic so they can make money on the ads. The ads, ironically, Google sells. Google makes money too. So this is a challenge because Facebook makes money on link bait. Google makes money on link bait, but they're also the companies that spread link bait. And we're the victims. And how many times have you clicked on a link? You know, cat has three puppies and go, oh, got me again. How many times? Or worse, and we know this happens all the time, people share articles they don't read, right? You like the headline, you share it. You didn't read it. You know what? Maybe that's the most important thing we can do. Stop sharing link baity articles. Maybe read the article and figure it out if that's true or not, and stop it if it's not true. Hey, wouldn't that be amazing? You're in charge. You're in charge of fake news, ultimately, right? What do you think? 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up next. The one lemon tree on earth that can make you lose 50 pounds overnight. And then I go to, let's just do a little Facebook test, see what we see. So I have two links to Facebook in my browser. I have Facebook Chronological, and I have regular Facebook. So this is Facebook, the algorithmic feed. And, of course, they always start with your memories on Facebook, but which nobody else sees. And then some of these are my friends. A lot of them are news, especially these days. But it's not everything my friends posted. Okay, so there's some birthdays, there's some stuff. Now, if you go to newsfeed and you click most recent, now that's going to change it. It's just chronological. And you get a completely different list. I didn't see that before. Some nice serrano peppers. Didn't see that before. Didn't see that before. It's completely different. Because this is chronological, not algorithmic. Problem is, Facebook resets this all the time. That's why I have a link, Facebook Chronological. But I think really humans are the best judge of fake news. What I don't, you know, do you want? Who's going to judge that? A computer? I don't think so. You hire how many people would Facebook and Google have to hire to filter out fake news? And what criteria would you use? So I think it's up to us. Stop sharing junk. It's just junk links. Stop sharing junk links. Right, Scott?
Damn straight.
Like that fake link that you were hitting an auto accident. That was fake news.
Yeah, that was fake news. I haven't been in an auto accident.
It was somebody in our chat room trying to spread some fake news.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, it was a few weeks ago. Oh, wow. Scott Wilkinson was a terrible auto accident. And I got all worried about it.
Oh, wow. I was the subject of fake news. That's amazing.
Some guy in the chat room, he said Jeff. Yeah, right. Yeah, sure, that's your name. All right, what do you want to talk about today?
Oh, well, we've got the flat panel shootout.
Oh, that's right. We were going to do that last week. Let's do it.
Let's do it. In fact, if you want to open our coverage of it, it's at the top of the homepage.
All right.
AVS Forum.
In chronological order, huh?
Well, I actually moved it up so you could find it easily.
Oh, aren't you sweet?
It's now a couple of weeks ago.
Because it was old. Oh. Boy, you have power. You can do that?
I can do that.
Wow. He's the manager of
fake
news.
I have the power.
He can control it.
I can control the horizontal.
Boss Baby Ultra. How to get dope. Where is it?
Oh, it's up at the top.
LGE.
Right.
I won't say anything.
Don't say anything.
I won't say anything. Well, it's right there in the headline, darn it.
I know.
Well, the radio listeners are not watching, so okay.
Right.
Lisa's pregnant. What?
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 Oh, yeah. Mike Heiss in the chat room. Talk about the photo player. He and I saw we went to a SMPTE meeting, which was the history of movie sound. And there was a guy with what a device called the photo player, which is a player piano plus pipe organ, xylophone, percussion. It was all meant to play while the silent movie was playing.
Oh, I like that when they do those things.
This thing's 100 years old.
San Francisco's been Symphony's been doing it all summer. They had Jaws with the orchestra. Star Wars. It's great. Scott Wilkinson is the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum at avsforum.com, all about audio and visual systems, hence the AVS.
He's audio, also, video, science.
Science. It's science. He blinded
it's
me
science.
With science. He's also the host of Home Theater Geeks, a podcast on our Twit network at twit.tv/HTG. You have on the front page, thank you for putting it there this week. It happened a couple of weeks ago, right? Results from the shootout. Now, tell me about the shootout.
Oh, the flat panel TV shootout. This is, by some counts, the 13th or 14th year that it has occurred. It went through some changes this year. It's now associated with an event in New York called CE Week, which is more or less kind of a micro version of CES. Companies get together, show their stuff for the summer and what have you. And one of the events is this flat panel TV shootout where the flagship TVs from as many companies as they can get, are assembled, put right next to each other, calibrated, all fed the same signal, and people come in and evaluate them and vote. Now, in the past, the vote was by audience. So anybody who showed up got a ballot and scored these TVs on a variety of categories: black level, color accuracy, contrast, brightness, that sort of thing.
Now, didn't this used to be held by a Long Island television sales company?
Well, by a retailer.
Retailer.
Yes, a store in upstate New York.
Or upstate New York, okay.
Yeah, called Value Electronics.
Value Electronics. So they no longer associated with this? Or?
Well, they're sort of associated with it, but it was determined or decided that there was a little bit too much salesness involved because it was from a retailer and he used TVs from his own stock.
Now it's Joel Silver, who's the founder of
it's
the
Joel
Image
Silver,
Science
is a totally independent
Foundation.
Guy. Yeah. Yeah, Imaging Science Foundation, very smart guy. And the judging is no longer done by the audience, but by a panel of experts. And I mean Hollywood colorists.
So people really spend a lot of time looking and thinking about this. Is the goal to get the most realistic reproduction, or is the goal to make it look the most like the Hollywood movie intended? Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Absolutely. And for that reason, the goal is to reproduce the director's intent as closely as
possible. When it's a movie, that's for sure. And when you're watching a baseball game, is it still, well, it's really what the director and the network wanted you to see, not what the
grass actually
looks like.
Well, yeah, exactly. What is it that the TV station is sending you?
Because they have, and I know this from working in television, there's people in the back called shaders. Mm-hmm. And in movies, they're called colorists or... Color timers from the real old days when it had to do with how long you left the film in a developing bath.
Yes, exactly.
But the color timers, the colorists, and the shaders, these people are really the magic eyes that determine what you see. And I guess what you want is a TV to reflect what they're trying to
exactly.
Get to,
and right? For that reason, at the shootout, not only were there, I believe, six TVs from manufacturers, consumer TVs, but there was also a Sony broadcast video monitor, a $30,000, 30-inch OLED TV that is used in...
That's what these shaders are looking at, really.
What they're looking at.
Right.
Exactly.
Because they don't want a television to have a color cast, and then you adjust for that, but nobody else sees that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And they pre-calibrated these flat panels. And how do they choose the flat panels? Which ones are?
They're the flagships. They're the top
from
of the
LG,
line from each
Sony,
manufacturer.
Samsung.
Yep.
Vizio.
Yep.
They had an entry from Westinghouse.
Yeah, that was kind of a last minute thing, and the Westinghouse did not perform as well because it doesn't have all the calibration controls. For one thing, they couldn't calibrate it. To the same
specifications. So this is interesting. So this isn't as it came out of the box. This is after it's professionally calibrated by SpectraCal to get it.
Precisely.
So the SpectraCal guy is now getting it as close as possible to true color.
Yep.
And then you're judging
the TV. To what are called the system. Yeah. With content that is spread, that is played and using an HDMI splitter.
So what are you
sent
measuring
to all the TVs?
Then? You're measuring...
Well, you're measuring the color of white, the color of the primaries.
How close it can get
to the what are called the system standards.
Interesting.
So there are very specific standards for where the white point should be, where what the color of white should be. If you look at a white thing, you can see it maybe looks a little yellowish or a little bluish or whatever. You need that. There's a very specific color of white, so we say.
So this is kind of different than the way it used to be, because when Value Electronics did it. Didn't they just take it out of the box and say...
No.
Oh, they calibrated it also?
Too.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
See, I wanted to take it out of the box and put it in cinema mode and then say... Because most people buy a TV, that's the calibration they do.
That's true. But when you're doing something like this where you really want to compare one TV against another side by side, you really need them to be on a level playing field.
All right. That's fair.
And I think that that's important.
So we've been burying the lead here because... Now everybody wants to know. Well, but I think you have to understand what winning means in this context.
Exactly.
So this is the panel that is best able to reproduce the intent of the director.
And in fact, there were instead of one category of just which is the best, this year they did three categories: which was the best in a darkroom setting, like a grading studio or a home theater; which was best in a bright room setting; and which was best at streaming content, which is, as you know, not as good as coming off of a disc. And so which TV best renders a streamed, a somewhat compromised image?
Was the presumption that the Sony mastering, the $30,000 Sony reference monitor,
yep,
accurate? And are they measuring who comes closest to that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Well, yep, who won? Exactly. Tell us.
It was LG, the LG E7 OLED, won all three categories.
Really? Because that's the one, well, I bought its predecessor. But
you bought the B6, which was last year's.
Same panel,
this is this year's. Same panel, well, roughly. They might have improved it a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure they have this year, but I'm just glad that brand won.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I will tell you this. The Sony OLED, the A1E, scored so close to the LG that they decided they had to give it an honorable mention because it really could have gone either way.
So OLEDs won, though, in both cases.
In all cases, OLEDs won, yes. Even against the Sony Z9, which is their flagship LCD TV, and that thing is a cannon. I mean, a light cannon. It puts out so much more light than the OLEDs. But the OLED contrast, I think, really was what won everybody
out. But see, that's an important point. It doesn't mean everybody should run out and buy an OLED. Cost aside, they are more expensive.
You
may want a brighter TV because it's in a living room and you can't close the windows or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly. In which case, you do want to consider an LCD. Right. Although I will say that I have an OLED now in my theater, and even when I have the lights on, it's plenty bright enough. I'm perfectly
OLED.
Happy with it.
Me
too. Man.
Last year's winner. More.
Anyway,
all the
LG OLED.
All the deets on the website, avsforum.com.
Including all the calibration results.
And, of course, you can follow Scott here every week and at twit.tv/HTG for the Home Theater Geeks show. Scott, thank you so much. More of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's talk tech right after this. I'm giving you the con, my friend.
The con.
It's all yours.
Thank you so much. Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday to you all. Nice to see you. Let me turn off my timer. I have my timer, actually, for my segment, but maybe Leah will put up the timer for this segment. Yes, there it is. 236 seconds to go. hey, everybody. Happy Saturday to you. Hope you're having a good Saturday. Good weekend. Loquacious came up with a good, maybe another good theme song. Emily the Strange, shoot out at the TV Corral. Very good. I like that. I like that a lot. Mike Heiss is asking me to talk about the photo player. If you were listening a while ago before we went on the air, he and I were at a SMPTE meeting where they played this thing. And as I described, it's a player piano with basically, think of a player piano with two rolls in it. And two giant boxes, essentially the same size as the player piano, on either side. And in those boxes are pipes for pipe organ, drums, a xylophone, bells, all kinds of stuff. And the player piano not only has a keyboard, but it's also got pulleys and levers and buttons. And while the roll is playing, one of the two rolls, the operator can bring in and out different instruments that play off of those rolls in the notes that are on the piano rolls. And people would do this during silent movies. So the silent movie is playing and the guy's watching and he's playing this music and he's banging on stuff and a car goes by and he honks a kind of ooga horn. It was really neat. It was really a lot of fun. I haven't had a chance to post about that yet, but It was great fun, and always great to see you, Mike. Hey, Mara, good to see you. Loquacious, always happy to see you. Anybody got any questions for me? I'm happy to sit here and answer them until the break comes up. Let's see. I don't know if I told anybody. If you follow AVS Forum, you know that I went and saw Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, which I thought was going to be at least, you know, visually stunning. And it is. It is actually visually stunning. I found the movie to be just horrible. Really bad.
Which movie are you talking about?
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
Too bad, because I really love Luc Besson. He did, of course,
Fifth Element. Oh, yeah.
And I was really hopeful that this would be the next Fifth Element, you know?
Yeah, it's not.
Oh, that's too bad.
It has some of the same humorous elements, kind of. I mean, it's got a definite
I finally saw Ghost in the Machine. I hadn't seen it.
Ghost in the Shell.
What'd
you think?
I quite liked it. And of course, visually, it's fascinating. It's really
amazing. Yeah,
I bought the 4K
visually
version
amazing.
So I could watch it on my OLED.
It's really it's out on. It is out on 4K.
Vudu has it. I didn't buy the disc. Vudu has a 4K. Oh. I probably should buy the disc though.
Probably an HDR on Vudu, actually.
Yeah, Vudu's, you know, UHD is pretty good if you have enough bandwidth. And
They need like 15, 20 megabits at least.
Yeah. Good article idea for AVS. Can streaming match UHD Blu-ray?
We used to do that a lot. My colleague Mark Henninger did a lot of comparisons of the same movie on streaming and on Blu-ray. And we're talking about having him start that up again with streaming and UHD Blu-ray.
Right.
I'm sure that the UHD Blu-ray
is better. Can you stick around for the top?
Yeah, sure can. Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's my phone number if you want to give us a ring and talk about technology. 888-827-5536. The website where we put everything I talk about. You don't have to make notes as you listen to the show. Please don't if you're driving. Everything I talk about, including links to articles and information and software and hardware and so forth, available at techguylabs.com. That's our website. And that's free. There's no sign up for it at techguylabs.com. Carl, Las Vegas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Carl.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
You know, not bad compared to the last couple of weeks in Vegas with flooding and monsoon rains and 50-mile-hour winds.
Yikes. Yeah, when it rains in the desert, there's nowhere for that water to go.
No.
You guys don't have storm
drains. Don't
know
how to drive either.
No, I bet. Yeah. Well, stay safe, please.
All right. Well, here's my question. I know enough that from listening to you, when you're on travel with your cell phones in foreign countries, turn the damn thing off.
Yeah, turn this, not the phone, but the cellular data roaming. That's the big That's the big off switch. Everything else is fine. Don't make a lot of long-distance calls, but everything else is fine.
Well, see, that's the thing. My wife's going to the Philippines in January, and I'm going to be here, and we both have cell phones through AT&T. I checked with AT&T, and they have this really great program that she can use for $40 a month and $1.50 a minute to call me.
Yikes.
Is there a better way?
Yeah, $1.50 actually is better than a lot of these other companies, which are $2 a minute. Most of the time, I presume she's going to be near Wi-Fi. I mean, that's really the answer. If she's staying in a home or a hotel with Wi-Fi, and she uses data from the Wi-Fi, don't use phone service, don't use SMS service, use data from the Wi-Fi, it won't cost you anything. And that means she can make calls and text messages using programs like Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp or Skype or on and on and on. A lot of people, because they're on Facebook, if you and your wife are both on Facebook, a lot of people use Facebook. And you can make video calls with Facebook, audio calls with Facebook, and of course you can message with Facebook Messenger. So, that uses Wi-Fi data. That, you know, if she goes out of the country, takes her phone, turns off cellular data roaming. It's in the cellular section. Turn off data roaming. And now, SMS messages can cost. I think AT&T gives you unlimited text messages. I'm not sure.
They do. Yeah. Yes.
So you buy the international package, you get the unlimited text messages. But remember, $1.50 a minute for calls. Don't make any phone calls, you know, except an emergency. You know, an emergency call in a minute, that's no big deal. But you wouldn't want to have an hour-long phone call. That's going to cost you $90. So what you wanted, but you could have an hour and a half Skype call for free when she's on Wi-Fi.
Okay. All right. Yeah, because it's $40 for the plan and $1.50 a minute.
I know. But really, you're spending $40 for data and you're spending $40 for text messaging.
Okay.
So the part of this, and I never know how much of it, but part of it comes from the fact that AT&T has to pay the Philippines phone company for this stuff.
Right.
And so some of that's the cost being passed on to you. But some of it is just AT&T is profit. And, you know, you're never going to get me to think AT&T is not greedy. So they're probably gouging you, but I don't know how much it costs them. So the trick is turn off data roaming. use Wi-Fi. Do you know if she's staying at a family or with a hotel or?
She'll be staying at a resort that has Wi-Fi.
Ah, just use that. Now, sometimes Wi-Fi in hotels isn't good enough for video calls, but it almost always be enough for audio calls.
Okay.
So as long as she uses that, it's just when she leaves the resort and is walking around town. And for that, you may want to spend the money on a little bit of data because it's a lifesaver. You know, so she's wandering around, she's lost, say, or she's wandering around, she's looking for a great restaurant. She turns off, you know, she turns data roaming back on, and now she can use Google Maps or whatever and find her way back or find a great restaurant. Then and then as soon as she does that, turn it off again. The other really useful trick is Google. Her phone's GPS works whether data roaming is on or off. What doesn't work is data is required to load the maps. But with Google Maps, and I'm not sure about Apple Maps, I think Apple Maps too, you can preload the region she's in and save it on the phone. So then even with data roaming off, Google Maps will work. And so that's a really helpful tip. It uses some space on the phone, obviously, but it makes it so much easier as you're traveling around. So do that. Turn off data roaming. Use Wi-Fi. Maybe you do want to buy the international package just in case she needs a little, you know, data when she's out and about. But if she's going to one of those resorts where you never leave the resort, don't worry about it.
All right. Well, you know, she's got a Samsung Note phone.
Great.
Which I know has a SIM card, which is easy to get to. I've heard you could actually go to some of these foreign countries and buy a replaceable.
You almost always can. Yeah, you almost always can. Here's the downside is now she'll have a Filipino phone number. Her phone number will no longer work because you're assuming the identity. That SIM card is the identity. So you're replacing, you're doing brain surgery on that note and putting in a Filipino data card means you're going to have a Filipino phone number, Filipino data. If you want to know more about that, I always recommend people go to, there's a wiki called Prepaid with Data. Just Google Prepaid with Data, and it will. And you go to the country you're going to, and it will tell you the best deals, you know, who offers them, where you get them. Almost always, when you get to the airport, you can buy a SIM card that you can pop in. But if she's in Wi-Fi, nowadays that's less and less an issue because of Wi-Fi. The other thing you can do, and this site will also describe that, is keep the SIM card in her phone, turn off data roaming, but buy one of those little credit card MiFi devices that is from that area, or rent it, actually, that is from that area. That way she can get data on up to 5 devices as Wi-Fi, but it's really coming from the local cell company there.
Oh, interesting. Okay,
that's another option. Yeah, it's called I call them MiFi, M-I-F-I cards. They're basically the little credit card-sized Wi-Fi access points that use cellular data. Instead of
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it may not be cheap. It may be cheap. Depends on the country. Remember, also, you're in the Philippines. You may not get super high speed internet available in all the areas that you're in. You could. I'm not sure where that resort is. If it's in a rural area, it may not be great internet. So all of those things are going to come into play. But that's where that wiki is great. Prepaid with data.
Prepaid with data. Okay, yeah, great. I'll look that up. Well,
you're welcome. Hey, have a great trip.
You too.
Yeah, bye. This is it's this time of year. This is all anybody wants to know. I love it. Break for news at the top of the hour here. We're going to come back in another hour to come. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, techguylabs.com, website. And there's a chat room, too, if you're interested in joining the kids in the back of the class. They're at irc.twit.tv. You'll find more about it on the website, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now we return you to the Scott Wilkinson program. It is already in progress. I'm going to run and get a cup of coffee and let you take it over.
Thank you. Heather says there's a call that I could help address.
Yeah, you want to help this guy?
Yeah,
all right. Isaac,
I can stick around.
Well, no, I can put him on the air right now. Hi, Isaac. You're talking to Scott.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
Hey, good. How about yourself?
Doing well. I got a question for you. I have a Pioneer receiver that says it has 4K pass-through, and I have a Sony TV that supports 4K and HDR, the high dynamic range. But Will if I do the receiver as a pass-through, you know, use that as my HDMI switcher, will I lose my HDR using that as a pass-through instead of just going straight to the TV?
Probably not. What is the model number of the receiver?
VSX-823.
Let me look that up real quick. That shouldn't be a problem.
Because I know HDR is kind of a new thing they're trying to work into everything nowadays. So I didn't know.
It kind of is. Yeah, you're right about that. Let's see. VSX-823, you said, right?
Yes, sir.
Let's see here. How long have you had it?
6 months, maybe.
Okay. And you bought it new?
Well, I bought it from a buddy of mine. He's a AV nut. He gets a new receiver every once in a while.
Yeah, I know. I'm hip to that for sure. 4K Ultra HD pass-through. Let's just make sure here if it says anything in particular about...
Because I went through a lot of trouble and very specifically picked out a TV that supported HDR because I knew it was going to be more prevalent in the future. So I don't want to use, you know, the receiver as a pass-through if I'm going to lose it.
Right. What is the model number of the TV?
It's a Sony XB1 55-inch. I don't have the exact model number on me.
Okay. All right.
But I bought the TV brand new less than a year ago.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it implements a type of high dynamic range or HDR called HDR10. And
the receiver does?
No, the TV does.
Oh yeah.
Now, what is your source device?
I have two different ones, but they're both game consoles. That one of them I use to play 4K Blu-rays, and the other I just stream and play games on.
Okay, and the one you play 4K Blu-rays on is the Xbox One?
Yeah, the 1S, yes, sir.
1S, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Boy, this is an interesting... Now that I'm looking at it, I believe they're up to...
See my dilemma.
Yeah, I do see your dilemma, and I'm not 100% certain that this receiver actually passes HDR10. It passes 4K, which means it probably should. I would think that it's likely that it does, but I'm looking here.
Because I've run out of HDMI ports on the back of the TV, so I figured I could just use all the ones on the receiver as a switcher. But
that's what you should do. That's the normal. That's exactly the normal way to do it.
Yeah,
certainly what I would. Let's see here. 4K by 2K resolution, 4K, blah, 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 4, blah, blah, is ready to pass through. See, this is a little bit of a concern to me. It says the VSX-823 is ready to pass through 4K, meaning that it can support blah, blah, blah. But it does not have anything about high dynamic range in the features.
That's what I feared.
It's possible that it might not, because it's a little older.
Right. Well, I figure since HDR is the newfangled deal, if it did have a pass-through for HDR, that would be one of the big, bold things on the front of the box selling point.
You would think. Exactly. That's why I'm thinking, because I'm looking on the website here, and it says nothing about it. And, in fact,
my assumption was that it didn't, but I wanted to call someone who knew, more than I did to make sure.
Yeah. From what I can tell, in a short amount of time, it doesn't say it. It doesn't tout it. So it's a question. Now, it's easy to test. Just get a 4K, almost all 4K or Ultra HD Blu-rays have high dynamic range.
Right.
And so, the easiest thing to do is just to stick one in that Xbox and play it and see what happens.
And then try passing through it to the receiver and see if there's a difference in visual quality.
Exactly.
All right. Well, then exactly. That's what I'll do.
It should probably tell you. By the way, the TV, I think, should tell you on its screen.
Mine does.
It's HDR.
Yeah. When there's HDR content, the TV will go, it's HDR.
Yeah, exactly.
It has a little indicator at the top right.
It has a little indicator, probably the top right. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, it's not 100% perfect in my experience.
Reliable, but it might give you an idea. It's a question mark. I'm going to have to do a little more research to find out whether or not this receiver certainly does it, but I'm questioning it now.
I made a point of getting a Denon 4K receiver that specifically supported
that.
It. Yeah.
Well, see, I ended up lucking out, and the buddy, he gave this to me just for helping him move in,
oh,
so
that's
I didn't
nice.
Ask any questions.
There you
yeah.
go. There you go.
Just,
like
you know
that.
What? Just...
I'm like, I'll work out the details.
Trick
later.
Yourself to say, yeah, I'm seeing HDR. It's gorgeous. It honestly doesn't look all that different.
Oh, yeah, Leo.
It's black
I disagree.
And white. And maybe the color's a little more saturated, but it's not like a
color's a lot more
DVD
saturated
to Blu-ray.
Than the
it's not a
oh,
night, man. Not night and day, in my opinion.
No, it's not a jump.
Scott and I always fight over stuff like this.
All right, well, I appreciate it, gentlemen. Y'all have a good one.
All right, take care. Thanks
all right,
for the call.
Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, I always. It's good. I mean, I go for it if I can.
See, as far as HDR is concerned, I won't. Except in rare cases, I won't go to a regular theater anymore.
Right.
I'll only go to a Dolby.
Oh,
Center.
Well, I don't know about theaters. I'm talking about on your TV. Mad Max looks pretty good on my TV, but
I'm sure it does.
Yeah, in HDR. But
now, have you ever done any kind of I'm going to play this clip in HDR, and then I'm going to
I haven't done an AB comparison.
All right.
I don't even know how I would do that.
Well, you would have to get a copy of the same movie on, say,
yeah,
Blu-ray.
I don't care that much.
You don't care that much. I do.
That's a lot of, that's your job. That's
exactly.
A lot of money to spend just to verify that it'll do it or not.
Well, and how much
I'm assuming,
better?
Well, that's what I'm saying is there's a certain psychological component to this. It looks so much better.
It's like people who spend $20,000 on a pair of speaker cables.
Right.
Oh, man, it sounds,
so good.
Exactly.
You could tell the difference. This is your business, though. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, happy to help that guy. I wish I could have been more help. I wish I could have been definitive. But it's an older AVR.
Right. That's not...
Oh, Mike, I said check for HDMI 2.0A. I bet you it doesn't have it.
Yeah.
I'll bet you it's 1.4.
Older's not a good sign.
Older's not good.
As we know. Hey, thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
All right.
Sorry, I didn't get to user 172012's question, but
hey,
next week.
Next week. Thank you. Take care.
You bet. You too.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, tech. Tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And you can also reach us via Skype out if you're somewhere else in the world. 888-827-5536. What do you think of this? I'm just curious. So if you've been following the news, you know that Russia's been hacking us. There's been a certain amount of hacking going on. I don't think anybody disputes that. China, too. But I don't think anybody disputes that, Russia has some pretty elite hackers, as we do. And we are almost certainly hacking them right back. And there's a guy for years named Eugene Kaspersky, who has made an antivirus program that has been considered to be one of the best for many, many years. Kaspersky antivirus. Maybe some of you use it. My colleague John C. Dvorak, the world's most widely read computer columnist, for years recommended Kaspersky. But then news came out and emails were leaked to Bloomberg Businessweek that Eugene Kaspersky and his company Kaspersky did work not just for the Russian government, but for the Russian secret police, the FSB, that they'd written software tools for them. And a bit of a cloud has started to form over Kaspersky. The U.S. government has declined to allow Kaspersky antivirus on machines used in the military and other places. There's some concern over it. And amidst this news, the company has announced they're going to offer a free antivirus. Everybody try. It's good. So here's my question to you. Would you use it? I don't know what the truth is. I don't know if Kaspersky is working for the Russians. This is really, in a way, a test of how computer, how careful you are with your computer. Would you use a free program from a Russian company? There's no doubt about that. That has done, it's not even allegedly, has done, there's emails to prove it, work for the Russian government and the FSB. Would you use a free antivirus for them? Now, what could be in that antivirus? Well, we don't know, and it's not open source, so there's no easy way to tell. I guess you could analyze it. You know, certainly hackers are able to analyze these things, but antiviruses in particular are difficult to break apart because, well, the hackers are always trying to analyze them. So I would imagine it's using a variety of techniques to prevent this kind of, you know, investigation. It could contain, you know, malware that isn't triggered until later. It could contain spying software that isn't triggered till later. We don't know. You know, the thing that would worry me is if this antivirus software installed, and by the way, it's used worldwide by, I think, 200 million people. A very large number use Kaspersky. If this free one was used widely throughout the U.S., completely benign until it received a command at some point to attack the U.S. power grid, that wouldn't be good. I'm not asserting that it does. I'm just wondering, would you do it? Would you install it? 8888, ask Leo. I don't. I wouldn't. Because there's plenty of other choices. I don't actually use an antivirus. I feel like Windows 10 has a very capable antivirus, and that's more than enough. Actually, and then there's probably people who are using Macs saying, well, I don't have to because I'm using a Mac. But then we've learned that there's a Mac virus that's been around for some time called Fruit Fly. And that it's been around, we think, experts think, for years. It's nearly undetectable. And it's what we call a RAT, a remote access Trojan. It lets a bad guy take control of an entire computer, turn on the camera, turn on the microphone. It wasn't, it's, for one thing, pretty old, because it was written in a language that hackers rarely use these days called Perl. It wasn't, according to the discoverers of Fruit Fly, particularly Patrick Wardle, who's a former NSA hacker who now is a chief of security at a security company called Synac. Wardle found one variant, then a second variant has been discovered. He says it's not the most sophisticated Mac malware, but it's, quote, feature complete, which means it can pretty much do anything you want. He did an interesting, he found it in an interesting way. Instead of trying to reverse engineer to you know, take the malware and try to figure out what it did, he noted that there were a number of websites hard-coded into the malware that the malware would contact, and those websites hadn't yet been registered, those domains. So he registered domains and noted that immediately several hundred Macintoshes joined the network waiting for commands. That's how these things work. He speculates, I would speculate too, that this was probably not a widespread virus, but written specifically to target certain people. There's no information, no way to figure out how it spread in the first place. I mean, it's a nasty virus. Apple, when it was first discovered, immediately sent out a patch, but there's a second variant that may still be active. 90% of the victims were in the United States, but there seems to be no pattern there. It's kind of a mystery. The only reason I bring it up, chances are very good you don't have it and you don't have a problem with it. But the point being that this malware has been sitting on Macintoshes for years, probably. Probably owned by people who said, I don't have to worry because I have a Mac. And by the way, never discovered by an antivirus program, right? Just completely undetected. Wardle had a little speech about this at Black Hat, the hackers conference on Wednesday. And that's how we know a little bit more about it. It's fascinating. Quite a mystery, though. We don't know. Nobody's taking credit for it, obviously. And because it's so little spread, it's likely it was a targeted, you know, a spear phishing attack on somebody. And probably not government created by a government. It wasn't that sophisticated. Apple's not talking. But they did patch. They did patch. 8888 asks, I feel like the best thing to do, people often, you know, say, well, Leo, you don't recommend antivirus software. Well, Windows comes with it. Macintosh has come with some very sophisticated tools like Gatekeeper. They have an anti-malware search program that's it's almost an antivirus built in. And they have a kill switch that allows them to remove viruses retroactively without your knowledge from machines. That's what they did with Fruitfly. So generally speaking, since viruses often don't catch problems, only about a third of antiviruses caught WannaCry, the ransomware, I think it gives you a false sense of security. I got an antivirus. I don't have to worry. I'd almost prefer that you didn't have an antivirus, but you were careful about what you did, what programs you installed, what links you clicked, what attachments you opened. You've heard me say this over and over. I don't want to wear it out my welcome here, but, you know, don't open email attachments, especially from people you know. I still see this in the mainstream press. Oh, don't open attachments from strangers. No, it's not from strangers. That's not the problem. It's from your boss, your cousin, your boyfriend, your husband, your wife. It's from people you know. That's the problem. Be very careful about attachments. Always check to see, you know, did you mean to send me this? What's in it? Should I open it? Oh, it was so funny. I saw it on Facebook. I thought I'd share it with you. Don't open it. Don't click links in Facebook or other messenger programs. If you're careful, I think you're safer than if you put on an antivirus and say, see, I'm protected. Safe computing really is, it comes down to you. 8888 asked Leo, so would you install Kaspersky? It's free. It's free. Come on. Have some. It's free. In Soviet Russia, malware infects you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That sounds very suspect, Leo.
Doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I wouldn't install it. If you're smart enough to be running little Snitch, you're safe. I think little Snitch is great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. I know right now what our musical director, Michael Cozio, is doing. He's got this song turned up way loud on his JBL Century monitors. That's what I used to do. That's the best thing to do in a radio studio. Turn it up real loud. That song sounds good loud. Richard in Highland, California, you're next. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I just have to compliment you and say you're the tech guy extraordinaire.
Thank you.
But you should can the singing job up. you butchered one of my favorite songs earlier.
With the Earth, Wind, and Fire song?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Falsetto is not my strong suit. I agree with you. Thank you for the caution.
Now for your expertise.
Yes, sir.
I had one of those things happen that you always hear about, but you never happen. Hope what happened to you, and I got my cell phone stolen.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And of course,
did they just grab it, or was it in the car?
Yeah, it was in the car. It was partially my fault. I left the window down.
Yeah, they reached in and grabbed. Because it's a dumb crime, because most cell phones cannot be used. Plus, almost all cell phones have a feature, which if I were a bad guy, I'd worried about, called Find My Phone, that allows you to track the phone down. There used to be a very brisk business. We would hear about in New York City, for instance, if you the iPhone fell out of your pocket in a cab. The cabbie, you know, knew what corner to bring it to, and he would just hand it out the window. They'd give him cash, and he'd drive on. There was a very brisk market. Then Apple did something interesting. They created a kill switch in the iPhone, which meant you couldn't just wipe it and reuse it, that the original owner had to unlock it before it could be reused. And that has apparently killed iPhone crime almost entirely, you know, the theft. But there are still plenty of dumb people who say, well, there's a $1,000 product. I'm going to steal it.
Well, the thing is, I had an Android. It was one of those HTCs.
Yep.
And my thing is, okay, I had the pattern lock on it, you know, trace the pattern. And what if they discover the pattern somehow, some way? You know, of course, I have contacts. I have family.
So most cell phone thieves aren't looking for what's on your phone. They want to resell the product as fast as they can.
Oh, okay.
It seems unlikely, unless you were a target, you know, somebody says, oh, that Richard guy, he's a millionaire. I'm going to see if I can get into his bank account. They're not going to sit there going, well, let's try the pattern, this pattern, let's try this pattern, let's try this pattern. They're just going to wipe the phone, which they can easily do. Or better yet, they're going to, you know, because it's usually, frankly, people who need quick cash for their drug fix. They're going to walk down the street and say, hey, anybody want this phone for $10? And hope that somebody will buy it. Most phones are not Android phones. Can be reused, can be wiped and reused, but I wouldn't worry about the private stuff on there. You're right, though, that a pattern is not the most secure lock. The most secure lock would be a long, strong password. But who wants to enter that every time they turn on the phone?
Yeah, that's the thing. Here's my question, though, that kind of led to what, based on what you said, kind of gave me another question. I already use my Google account on my new phone. So I'm assuming because I've done that, I can no longer use the Google account for the old phone to get my pictures and all that, right?
Well, if you've been using the Google account, chances are all that stuff got synchronized anyway and is available on your photos.google.com. The backs up passwords and all that stuff. What you should all do, and do it now on this current phone, is install Android Device Manager if it's not already on there. Because if you had it on the old phone, you can wipe that phone remotely.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like Find My Phone. Now, I don't recommend, please, folks, if you've got Find My Phone on your phone, don't go track down the bad guy. We don't know how dangerous this person is. But I know people have done it. I even know people have done it successfully, but it just scares the willies out of me. Because you don't know. You're going down some back alley and some guy says, oh, you want your phone back? I got your phone. And beats you up or something. So don't use it for that, although you can. It'll pinpoint where your phone is. But you have a remote wipe capability. And that, on both Android and iOS, is gold. Then you don't have to worry. Then you know your device is done. But you can have multiple. Now, if he's using your phone, by the way, Google will let you know. You can look at recent logins, go to google.com/myactivity, and you can see if they've actually used that phone. Chances are they haven't.
Okay.
And yes, they can use, you can have I have multiple Android phones all with the same Google account.
That's good to know. That's a little comforting because it's good that these bad guys are one-dimensional in that sense.
They're yeah. Money. Anybody stealing a cell phone these days they're stupid. They don't know any better. People are paying attention, which is not your average criminal, know that those phones aren't really worth anything, especially iPhones. iPhones used to be worth so much that there was a brisk market in stolen iPhones. Not anymore. You can go to google.com/android/find and see where that Android phone is. And if it's not active and hasn't been active since it was stolen, that's what they did. They wiped it. They tried to sell it, and if they couldn't sell it, they destroyed it.
And how would I look up the phone with the old phone number? How does that
happen? You'll see all the phones when you go to google.com/android/find. You'll see all the phones. Everything you've set up with Google.
That's why we need you, Leo. You're the professor. I'm like a second grade tech guy.
So. I have to say, this stuff moves so fast now. It's harder and harder for me to keep up. A lot of credit goes to our chat room. There's about 500 very smart people in there, and then about two not so smart, but 500 very smart people, and I'm not going to tell you which is which, and they have a lot of good answers. I look at them all the time, and they have many of the great tips that I pass along to you. I should give them credit more often. Hey, thanks for listening. I appreciate it, and I promise, Richard, no more singing until next time.
Okay, take care. Thanks.
Sure. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you for not singing. That's what I love doing this show for a couple of reasons, but the main reason is I actually love technology, and I started writing about technology in the late 70s, back in the it was Atari, and then the IBM PC came out in 81. They got my first Mac in 84, and I've been writing for magazines ever since then. And in the early days, it was just so I could get software, I could afford to buy software and hardware because it was very expensive. But I have a deep love for it, and I think people should be able to use it, and I know how hard it is. So a lot of the reasons I still do this show and I care so much about this show is because I really want you to understand how it works to the degree you're interested, so you can use it to make your life and the world better. I think it has that capability. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny, you're dark as can be. Let's see.
Let me see if I can move this around a little bit.
Lighten you up. Yeah, it's the windows behind you. Are you in Connecticut?
I am.
Looks a little Connecticut-y. That looks good. That's fine.
I'm in my cousin's playroom. I'm sitting on a chair this big right now. My computer's on a literally my knees are almost in my chest. And
wait till Jack gets a little older and you have to go to the school meetings at the kindergarten. This is practice for that.
Only half my butt fits on this chair. So if I look uncomfortable, there's a reason.
All right, here you go. Here you go. Here you go. Let's see.
And I'm doing laundry at their house.
Well, that's what you should do.
Well, and I just ran up. I'm not staying here. The kids are playing. I just ran up to put the stuff from the washing to the dryer, and I forgot to take out the goodies we brought them, and they just are all over the washing machine, which is not good. All these dried fruits are now in the washing machine.
Dried fruits?
Yeah, like cranberries banana
chips.
The kid
has them in his pocket. I get it.
No. I had them in little.
You
bags.
Have them in your pocket. Oh, the kid.
No,
Johnny.
They were really nice gifts. They weren't cheap.
Oh.
And I left them in the laundry bag like a dumb.
Oh, so now they're rehydrated.
I they're going to kill me. I'll tell you that much.
I got a dehydrator so I can make my own dried fruit. It was good. I did strawberries and apples and pineapple the other day. It was so good.
Nice.
So sweet and delicious. All right, here we go. Listen, this guy here is the man. He's Johnny Jett. He's been everywhere. He's our traveling dude. Joins us each week to help us travel better with technology. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Leo.
How are you today? Welcome.
Thank you. I'm doing well. I'm in my home state of Connecticut, where I grew up.
Oh,
visiting
good.
Friends and family.
Nice. And you're sitting on a little tiny chair in the kids' room.
Yes. I got a circus tent next to me. You should see the toys. I mean, Jack is just like having a field day.
Nice. Really nice.
Yeah. So if you hear him screaming, you know, I apologize. I got some people watching them, but I don't know how good of a job they're doing.
Yeah. I hear you. You had a little laundry problem earlier. And I'm sorry about that.
Yes. Right when I get off of this, I have to go deal with that.
Johnny had a bunch of gifts, dried fruit?
Yes. I had like banana chips, cranberries. I don't remember what everything was in there.
Because you bring that on a flight. See, you're smart. You bring your own snacks. Always a good idea. I never can remember to do that, but it's a great idea.
Yeah, well, we were staying at the JW Marriott Essex House in New York City, which is a beautiful hotel.
I love the guests of the Tonight Show stay at the Essex House.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Well, not anymore. That was quite a few years ago.
Well, I did see like a famous rocker in the bar.
Yeah, yeah. So. I think actually it was the Today Show or it was one of the morning shows they used to put
people
up.
Okay, it's a beautiful hotel.
It's right on the Central Park.
Central Park South.
Yeah.
It's 59th Street.
Gorgeous.
And 7th Avenue.
Love it.
Beautiful, really, really beautiful.
You can see it from the Trump Tower. You look down and there it is.
And they gave us all these like dried fruits and I brought them to my cousin and I forgot to take them out of the laundry bag.
Oh.
And I put it all in there and now it's like a bomb hit the place. Anyway.
They rehydrated.
Well, they're going to rehydrate me when I get off this phone.
Okay. So. Well, okay. This is your respite. You can instead pretend you're a grown up and talk about a travel site or a travel app that you like.
So I don't rent cars very often, and I've actually, this site's been around for a long time, but I've never talked about it. And it is probably the cheapest place to find rent-a-cars. Besides Priceline, if you go and do a bid, a blind bid. But so anyway, it's called Auto Slash, AutoSlash.
Auto Slash. Oh, I get it, because the prices are slashed.
Yes. So what you do is you go in there, you put in your...
Just the prices.
No, that's right. So you put in your cities, or if you're doing airports or whatever, or locations, or if you're doing a drop off the same place. So I actually just put in New York to Boston, and it was like a $195 a day. Then I was like, I put in Connecticut to Boston, and it went down to $45 a day. But you put in your vehicle type, and with these guys, you also put in if you're a member of any of these organizations like AAA, AARP, Entertainment Book, or Costco, any of these warehouse clubs. And don't lie, but if you are, they'll even find you more discounts. And so they give you a quote. If you book it, they just keep pricing it out every day or whatever. And if it drops, they'll rebook you.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes, so I used it this week.
Is it with major rental companies or
big time? Big time.
So you're not going with some weird little company.
Oh, no. So I just rented with National, but National was the cheapest out of them. I usually like to rent from Avis because they have a really cool app where you don't even have to stop at the counter. But the Avis was twice the price as National on this one. So I went with National, and the guys were awesome. I went to the counter, and the guy's like,
wait a minute, I don't get it on the website. I have to.
No, so get, you know what? They email it to you. They email you, and it takes about 20 minutes. But
they say they won't reuse your email.
That's what they say, and okay. I've used it. You know, I've been testing it out for a couple months, and they haven't. The only thing they do is they'll send me an email like a few weeks later saying, are you still interested in this rent a car? Because I'm traveling again. So that's it. I've never seen anything else, no spam or
and
anything.
How are
like
they
that.
Getting special deals? Are they looking at specials, or they apply coupons, or what is it they're?
They have some kind of corporate rate. And what I see is actually they're using Priceline. So you're booking on Priceline.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so when I went to the counter, you know, the guy's like, I heard him talking to his buddies. Like he's on a corporate rate, so you can give him an upgrade if you want.
Oh,
Yeah, and they were really cool. They were like, you know what? If you drop the car off early, we won't charge you. You can get a discount, or if you and they're like, don't hurry to drop it off at 5 o'clock, like I said I was. They said you have till 3 o'clock the next day, which you know usually you don't have that with like Priceline when you book on a blind bid, which is the way I used to always do it. I would go into Priceline and I would put in, you know, I'm going to Seattle or whatever, and I want to pay $22 a day, and that's great, but you don't know what company, and if you're ever late, they will charge you up the yin yang. I think it's $80. It might have changed.
Wow. Fortunately, my yin yang has no money, so I have an empty yin yang. So great. So that, again, is autoslash.com.
And not only, by the way, with them, is if you don't even have to book through them. Let's say you already booked through a third-party site. You can forward your information, your reservation to them, and they will track it, and they'll let you know if it drops.
I saw that on the front page. That's cool. Yeah.
Yes. So there's a couple good things there. So check that out.
And your app?
My app is if people are afraid to fly, and I used to be afraid to fly, so I can feel for them.
By the way, when they make the movie, the Johnny Jet story, and I think I'm thinking Leonardo DiCaprio to play Johnny Jet. It will be about how you were terrified of getting on an airplane, and you conquered your fear of flying, and now you fly more miles than any human alive. It's a fact. I can't wait for the movie, and Leo is going to be awesome in that part.
Yeah. My friends tell me I look like Barney Rubble, so maybe
Barney Rubble.
I'm waiting.
Oh no, Wilma! I got to get on an airplane. What do you have for us?
It's called Soar. S-O-A-R. So. Anyway, this app, a lot of it is you have to pay for the classes, but you can do it right there on your app. There are some free programs in there, but if you're on a plane.
It's fearofflying.com. So this is like their thing. This is what they do.
Yeah, it's actually from a pilot, and it's a whole program.
Did you use this?
I did not use it. You know, I was fortunate. I mean, it took me a while to get off, go over my fear, but there was three different ways I got over it. Basically, I wasn't afraid of crashing. I was more afraid of like claustrophobia and being not being in control.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, it was about not being being afraid of crashing. But then you look at all the stats, and I talked to so many flight attendants, pilots.
Oh, it's people safer than driving. I mean,
and the stats show that. So
is it true though that the more you fly, the less you fear, or do you? Because I went through a stage where the more I flew, the more scared I got, and then for some reason I just decided, well, if it's my time, it's my time, and I think there's different stages.
I know a lot of business travelers all of a sudden get afraid to fly.
Yeah, it can come on you later in life. Yeah,
yeah, especially if you just have kids. A lot of people they have kids get afraid. Yeah, so I'm hoping that doesn't happen to me again. Yeah. But anyway, I've downloaded this app just in case. There are some free tools on there to take your mind off of it or to show you how flying works.
Best way, though, go to fearofflying.com and then you can find SOAR there.
The guy wrote a book. He's pretty well known. The app is –
What does the app do? How does it –
So it has different programs on it. So you can say, I want this course. I want to learn how the flying works. Or there's another one.
It's interesting. This guy is a psychotherapist as well as an air captain.
And it also has a turbulence forecast. So you can actually bring out
I don't like turbulence. That scares me. The wings are not going to fall off the plane. But when you see them going like that, it just makes me nervous.
Well, they tell you to take out the app when you see the wings flapping, and they will show you how little it's really doing anything.
No. These planes – they're good. I'm going to download this app. That would be a good thing to have. I like it.
So check it. Yeah. Check it out.
Check out Johnny's website, johnnyjet.com. He's got a great free – actually a bunch of great free newsletters and travel tools there and lots of articles. And we want to keep this guy flying because he's our favorite travel expert. And now, by the way, weren't you named like one of the top travel influencers in the world?
Top 10 by Forbes. Yes.
Very, very cool. I've heard of them. Top 10 travel
influencers.
I'm so proud of you. Johnny Jet.
I'm trying to make their top 10 billionaire list or money list.
It starts with influencers and then you can be in the Forbes 500. Thank you, Johnny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's so awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow. Travel influencers. That's so good.
I was amazed how much play that got. I mean, CNN called me up, interviewed me about it like a minute after it was released. Hello. Oh, because I'm doing a radio show. Here comes my cousin.
Why are you sitting in my chair with your big butt?
Uh-oh.
Cute.
Okay.
Cute. So look at this. You're number 8, but is it ranked by most important?
Probably. So I'll just take top 10.
I don't know who any of these other people are. Who's Brian Kelly? I don't know who that is.
He's pretty big, the points guy. He has a lot of pull in the travel industry.
Oh, he's the points guy. Okay.
Yep.
Kirsten.
Yep. She's a blonde abroad.
Oh, I follow her, the blonde abroad. Okay. Murad and Natalie Osman. I don't know them.
You've definitely seen their photos on Instagram. It's where the woman's has her hand. And he's holding her hand.
Oh,
and
I love those. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's their Instagram handle?
I think it's his name. And he's got a funky Russian name.
Yeah.
But their photos are amazing.
Eric Stone, I recognize. Yeah.
He's a family travel guy.
Yeah.
Dave and Deb, they're Canadian. And this guy, Fun with Louis, I traveled with him before. He's a big YouTuber.
You probably run into these people at all the conferences. You know all
Most of them I know. Yeah. Not all.
I love it that you're right in there, Johnny. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. That is so awesome. I appreciate it.
Influencer. Travel top 10 travel influencer.
There it is.
There you go. I'm so proud of you, Johnny. Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I'm going to go try and clean up that laundry machine right now before anyone finds out.
Before anybody discovers all the – once were raisins, now they're grapes. Once were prunes, now they're plums.
Yeah.
All right, Johnny. Thank you. Talk to you next week. All right.
Take care.
See you.
Bye-bye.
I love it how – what's your name? Razzle? Who's probably we know who Razzle is, right? Leo's so wrong on Chromebooks. That's an opinion. You can't say right or wrong on opinion. And certainly I don't mind being corrected if I say something factually wrong, but that's not fact or not fact, you know, a Chromebook, whether you think it's a good thing or not. And I have to say, I think the evidence is on my side. It is the best-selling book in schools now. It's 21% of all the computers sold in schools are Chromebooks. If you look at the Amazon bestsellers, Chromebooks, it is rapidly becoming the most purchased computer, I think, for most people. Not for everybody. Not for you, obviously, Razzle. It's a very good choice. But that's not a right or wrong thing. That's an opinion thing. You can't say somebody has a wrong opinion. That's not how it works. And, you know, schools also buy iPads, and it makes me crazy they buy iPads. It's just, that is wrong. But I'm right. Yeah, whatever. Whatevs. Whatevs, Razzle. If that's your real name. Actually, I just bought, I'm really excited, I can't wait till it comes, a Lenovo. I'm kind of in the Lenovo. I'm a Lenovo fanboy all of a sudden. But I just bought the T240 because I found a really good deal on it. Is that what I bought? Or 2250? But I think I can put free BSD on it. The free BSD, a lot of the free BSD developers use ThinkPads. Boy, I had this computer built for free BSD, and now I'm using Debian on it. Never quite able to get it working. Not to my liking, but I'd love a free BSD ThinkPad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Let's go to line 6. Sherry is on the line from Canyon Lake, California. Hi, Sherry.
Hi there.
Welcome.
Well, thank you. I've been learning since I've been listening to you.
Good. What can I do to help you?
I need some help on securing some privacy on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, when Googling my name, I see the fact collecting sites that I probably have to contact separately, but all they're doing is collecting information from public records. So
that's right.
How do I get that?
Well, you can't.
My home mortgage off the internet.
All of that's public record. So that is a big change, though, because it used to be you'd had to go down to the courthouse to get that information in the county. Now it's available to everybody all over the world. You can go one by one of those sites, but more sites spring up all the time. This is, you know, there are companies that make their business doing things like this. And in my opinion, they're misleading their customers. There's companies that are designed to improve your reputation. There's companies that are designed to get your name off the internet. The internet, part of this comes from the idea that, well, the internet is somehow like a library where you could take a book off the shelves. The internet just reflects the world. And so you can't really go back and edit it. You know, in the United States, we don't have this right to be forgotten. But in the EU, they have created this thing where somebody can go to Google. They can't get it off the internet, but they can go to Google and say, look, I don't want anybody to know about my my shoplifting conviction when I was, 18, 10 years ago. I want you to take the article about it down. And in the EU, Google has to do it. It's the law in the EU. And they fought it, and I agree they should fight it, because that's, if in effect, editing history. And it, by the way, if you want to get something taken down, you shouldn't go to the search engine. You should go to the company that has, go to that newspaper and try to get them to take that down. Good luck with that, by the way. Good luck with that. Because it's the record. It's the public record. And so I wish we could. I guess what I would do, I would say, is you can, if you want, go to almost all these websites, have a procedure for getting your name removed. But there will be another one and another one and another one. They send out people to county seats to take down all this information and put it up on the web. And there's very, very little you can do about it. And if you've bought a home, that information is in the public record. That's why Zillow and Redfin exist, because they can tell you what a house sold for because it's public record. And there's enough demand for it that these companies continue to create, these databases. I agree with you. It's really frustrating.
Well, that it's I don't, private stuff if it's your home mortgage. And
it's not private. Like that, it's public. That's the point.
Yeah.
It is public.
You can't opt out as far as the internet. It could still be public record at the office, at the county.
Right, but we live in the 21st century, and unfortunately, those databases are online and publicly available. And I don't know what the answer is for you. I think we have to kind of just adjust our notion of what privacy is. Mm-hmm. I of course have done the same thing as you have and found sites like Spokio, you can opt out on these sites. I started doing that, but there's so many of them, I just gave up.
Can't keep up with them popping up.
No, and if you're a celebrity, by the way, movie stars don't buy houses in their own name. They understand that, right? They have a holding company. You create you kind of try to eliminate the paper trail. And even then, there are maps of the movie stars' homes for sale on every corner in Beverly Hills. So, we live in a different age, and it's, I don't mean to poo-poo your concerns. I completely agree with you and understand. I just don't know what the answer is. I don't think there's a way to get rid of this.
I don't either.
You can go one by one, and I would, but those databases are out there.
Yeah.
And once they're out there, you know, the sites copy one another. It's just, it's going to be whack-a-mole.
It seemed like I already went down that trail, and you just get further and further into it, and I realize what the source is, the public record.
Right.
But some of the sites even have your family members in.
I know. You can do that with me. You can get my phone number. You can get my home address. next time I'll be smart when I buy a house, and I won't buy it in my name. But it's too late now. And Congress could even make a law against this, as the EU has, and it still wouldn't fix the problem.
Right.
These companies just move offshore. They move to Trinidad and Tobago, and they keep doing it because the internet is a global phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So it
came on us fast.
It came on us fast, and we aren't really well prepared to deal with it, are we?
Mm-mm, not at all.
You know, it made sense that some of this stuff should be on, you know, who owns, you could think 100 years ago, it was good to be able to go to the courthouse and find out, well, who owns that property, you know, down the street? That made sense. And it was limited to people who could make the trip to the courthouse, which meant it was limited to, you know, local residents. Nobody thought that someday somebody would copy all that information down, put it on the internet, and it'd be available to every single person in the world. I'm sorry. I wish I had a better answer for you. It's particularly a problem for women, Sherry, because of issues of stalking and violence and so forth. It's more of a problem for women. You know, Google did an interesting thing. They have a technology. It's widespread now. Government has it. Facebook has it. You could take a picture of somebody on the street and find out who they are. But Google wisely did not turn that feature on in its face recognition. Nobody has done that yet, but that day is coming. Somebody will do it. The government already can do it. You know, the government can look at a video of a street corner and see and identify every single person on the street corner.
Yeah, and it's doable. Look how many cameras are just everywhere we go.
Absolutely. And it's just a matter of time. And I'm glad Google didn't do it, because imagine some creep walking down the street says, hey, that's a cute girl, takes a picture of her and gets her home phone number and address. Shocking. Yep. That would be terrible. And yet,
I know,
that technology exists. And it's only a matter of time, in my opinion, before it's widely available. And that depresses me. But I think that this, I don't know what you do. I really don't know what you do.
I don't either, unless you're kind of famous. You could go under a different name.
Yeah, well, and I think that's what we're going to teach our kids to do, is to start protecting their privacy in ways that we didn't used to think. Like, for instance, when you get a home loan. You know, when you register a website, for instance, the name and address and phone number of the person who owns the website is public record. What websites did is they created what they call Who Is Privacy, which means that it links to something they have that isn't you, and then to you, so that nobody can go just, you know, because normally you could search for techguylabs.com, see who owns it, and it would be my home address or my business address, which is what it is, because I don't obscure it, and my phone number. So all of this is, I know. What are you going to do, though? I don't know what to do.
What are you going to do about the chip that they want to put in? inmates.
Yeah.
Or whoever.
Well, it's just a matter of time before we have a chip implanted. The problem with that is chip, like your fingerprint, it's kind of semi-permanent. You can remove the chip and replace it, but the fingerprint you can't. And so there are a lot of privacy concerns about giving up your fingerprint because that uniquely identifies you. So, for instance, when you go to Disney and you want to get a fast pass, they take your fingerprint.
Yep.
Because that's a convenience, right? Because then you just, you know, you go in. But now Disney has your fingerprint, which cannot be changed in its database. That's another cause. I can go on and on.
My gosh.
In fact, it's better we don't know. It's just better we don't know, isn't it?
It's really like Facebook. You don't really know how much you are connected with Facebook and who can see what out anywhere. They can find pretty much anything someone would want to find about an individual.
I'll give you another.
No.
Yes. I know. I'll give you another one. Don't ever do, and I see all my friends do this, and I keep trying to tell them, don't take quizzes on Facebook. Because as fun as that is, I would like to know which Game of Thrones character I am. I would. I would like to know what my mastery of the English language is. But every time you do that, you leak not only your information, but this is the thing that scares me, but everybody you friended, friends of friends, to that company.
Friends of friends.
To that company. And so there's a company in England called Cambridge Analytica. That's what they do. They make Facebook quizzes, and then they sell it to political campaigns. Not just your information, but all your friends' information that you leaked by taking that dumb quiz. Oy. So the best you can do is learn, and let's hope we can find some way to protect ourselves in the future. I'm glad you asked about this, Sherry. I don't know if there's an answer to it. Yeah.
Fun talking to you.
Nice to talk to you, Sherry. Thank you for listening. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. I know somebody who used his elbow instead of his thumbprint at Disney. It worked. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour three of the Tech Guy Show. We're talking, getting together and talking about tech, computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. And we debate. It's not, we got kind of an ongoing debate. The chat room loves to debate whether Chromebooks are a good idea or a bad idea. There's always a debate. I have my opinion. We can do that, too. 8888 Ask Leo. We could talk about privacy. We could talk about security. Lately, we've been doing a lot of that. 888-827-5536. Mostly, though, it's people calling up saying, this thing won't work. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. The website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. That's free, by the way. There's no fee, no charge, no sign-up. It's just wide. It's like the web used to be. You just go there and you can read stuff. Going way back, we've got 1,408 shows now. Audio and video and the text, and you can search it. It's a great resource. You can even go back to 2004. Search and find out what we were talking about in 2004. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the most important part. It's no show unless you call in. Clinton in Alberta. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Clinton.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you. My question is, somebody has broken into my, got through my iPhone, and somehow I've gotten into my Google account.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, and it's been driving me crazy for the last month.
Did they change the password?
They did. They did. I went to change the password, and then I think there was like something called a password recovery that was sent to that was forwarded onto a different email.
Oh, so they changed the password and the email.
Yeah. Well, the email password.
So when you set up a Google account, they encourage you. They don't force you to, but they encourage you to. Of course, you've got a Gmail pass of email, but anybody who compromises your account is going to have access to that. So they encourage you to give a second email address that you could use for recovery. They also, and I strongly encourage you to do this, it's maybe too late for you, say, what's your cell phone number? What's a phone number for you? Because generally, while a bad guy might be able to change the password, change the recovery email, without your say-so, they won't be able to change that phone number because they'll send a text that says, do you want to change this number? And you'll say, hell no. Yeah. I bet you didn't have one of those, did you?
No. Now, here's another interesting thing, right? when you go into your settings in your Google account, there is some weird, there's also something called there's a recovery email.
Yep.
There's also another heading called an alternative email.
Yep.
And now in this email, right?
Now, did you set one of those up?
I did not.
Yeah.
I did not.
So this is the problem, because they can't, there's no other way they can contact you. And there's no way you can say to them, hey, somebody got my account. Now, what you can do, and this is much more difficult, is say, look, my account's been stolen. And then they'll ask you a series of questions that presumably only you will know. Like, when did you first create the account? And tell us about three emails you got from this person. That kind of thing that only the holder of the account might know. This is a very weak secondary way of protecting you. But if you haven't given them a recovery email address that's separate from your Gmail address and a recovery phone number, it's all they got left. Have you tried that route?
No, I have not. I've got their. I phoned up my carrier and they gave me the number to call, right? Which happens to be in Eastern, well, in Quebec,
right?
Right, and. Anyway, I did call between they work from 9 to 5 sort of thing.
Yeah, so they'll go through. You will want to go through this. I have to say, I know people have gone through who didn't know, they couldn't remember when they created their Gmail account and things like that. They couldn't answer those questions. It is conceivable you've lost control of your Google account.
Yeah, and I use this for my business, and it's.
I'm going to cross my fingers. Try emailing them as well. So there is a phone number, but I would also contact them by email as quickly as you can, because you want to get that back as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
And because this is really bad news. This is and so my only advice to you is to contact Google, go through that much more difficult recovery process, and cross your fingers. But this is a great cautionary tale for every single person listening. It doesn't just apply to Google. It applies to your email, whoever you get it from. Really, this is the worst possible scenario, right? You lose control of your email. Everything's in there. In fact, the next stage is the bad guy will then try to get recovery emails from Twitter and Facebook and everybody else. I forgot my password. And if you've been using that Gmail account as your recovery account, you may have lost a lot more than Google Mail. Your email can be the key to everything. So this is a crisis. How do we avoid this? You need to take proactive action, every single person listening right now. You need to make sure you provide a secondary email account for recovery. Give them a cell phone number for recovery. And make sure that it asks, that the cell phone, before anything is changed, like your password, asks for your permission at those two places. And finally, turn on, this is the single most important thing, turn on two-factor authentication. If somebody guesses your password, they will still need that 6-digit code from the Google Authenticator on your phone or your tablet. They will still need that code, and that stops hackers cold. It's the single most important thing you can do. And you should do it on everything, your bank, your Twitter. I know it's inconvenient, but think how much more inconvenient it would be. Put yourself, I feel bad, Clinton, but put yourself in Clinton's shoes. This is the worst thing that could happen to you. Because it's not just your email now. If you use this for your recovery email for other sites, the next thing they do is they go to those sites and say, I forgot my password. Facebook has an interesting recovery process. In fact, I would take advantage of this, where you can designate three friends. Say, these three people are my friends. If you then lose your account or you forget your password, Facebook will email those three friends and send them part of the password or some sort of identifying information. No one of them will have enough to get into your account. But what you do is you call or you email those friends and say, okay, what did Facebook send you? You put it together. Now you can get back into your Facebook account. That's genius. I think that's very clever. None of this would be necessary, though, if you turn on two-factor authentication. Please. Clinton, I'm so sorry this happened to you. Your only recourse at this point is to contact Google and try to get that back. And before, right now, go change your password on all your other accounts, okay? But even then, That's not going to work. Actually, what you want to do is quickly set up another email account. It could be at Google, and change the recovery email address on all your other stuff, your bank, Twitter, Facebook, to that new email address, not your old Gmail address. Is that the address that's associated with your Facebook account, for instance?
Yes.
You see where the problem is? Now that guy knows that address. He's probably right now logging into Facebook and saying, "Oh, I forgot my password."
Right.
I'm sorry. This is terrible news.
This is also like, as I said, I use an iPad and an iPhone to do most of my computing and stuff, right? And this was a strange thing happened last month that I went over my data plan. I never went over my data plan.
Oh, interesting. Maybe this guy's been using this for a while.
Yeah. And then this month, right, I used the, you know, in the Apple iPhone and iPad, right, we have the cellular settings and it keeps inventory of how much data you use.
Yeah.
So
that can be wrong. You know, your cell carrier is the ultimate arbiter. Even Apple will say that. That's our best guess. The cell provider is the one that tells you. Dude, turn on two-factor and change your recovery email address and everything you can. Now you're fighting fire. Now you've got a forest fire. You've got to put the backhoe in use. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I quit Facebook. I've quit Twitter and Facebook, but the problem is, it's a job hazard. I have to have both, otherwise I can't report on them. I realized, I don't know anything. Oh, what's new in Facebook? I don't know, so I had to reactivate my account. Two factor. Turn it on. It's worth the inconvenience. It's a minor inconvenience compared to the massive inconvenience of losing control of your email account. That's just awful. You can't get worse than that. Well, I mean, you can, but it's one of the worst things that can happen to you. Read the story, the saga of Matt Honan, M-A-T-H-O-N-A-N. He was a Wired reporter. I can't remember who he works for now, but Matt had the very valuable Twitter handle, M-A-T, and at M-A-T, and those really short Twitter handles are very valuable. Wasn't the people who hacked him didn't know him. They just liked at M-A-T. They wanted it for their gamer tag or something. So they went through considerable effort using social engineering calls to customer service reps at Amazon and Apple to hack his, what did they hack? I think his iCloud email. And then from there, the whole point was to get his Twitter account, which they did. And Matt was able to, with great effort, I think, recover all that stuff. But he says, and it's absolutely true, had I had two-factor on, none of this would have happened. Also, Apple and Amazon changed their customer service policies. But the problem with customer service reps is the name, customer service. If you call in and you assert that you're the customer, help me please, they'll often help you, even if you're not really the customer but a bad guy. There's another great article you should read by Kevin Roose, R-R-O-S-E. He was with Fusion at the time, where he asked two hackers to hack him. This was about a year ago. And that they used different techniques. One was more code hack, and one was a social exploit. And both of them worked, and he got badly hacked, even though he knew it was coming. But one of the things they did is they got access. They got access to his cell phone account. And the way the woman did it is she called a customer service rep, said, "My husband's just left town, and I've got to I have a really important email. I just need get into his account." And she played a YouTube audio of a baby crying in the background, and she got the customer service rep to feel bad for her, and she unlocked the account for her, even though she wasn't Kevin Roose, and Kevin Roose isn't married and doesn't have a baby. It's an amazing article. So there's your homework. we'll put those in the show notes. Kevin Roos's article on Fusion about how he asked two hackers to hack him. Matt Honan's article about him getting hacked when he was at Wired a few years ago. And I'll give you one more. I'll give you three good articles. An article from a Dutch paper about what a Wi-Fi hacker can do to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We're going to put three really useful. If you want to read the annals of hacking, just so you know how bad it can get, I'm going to put in the show notes at techguylabs.com three articles. This will be just a little light reading for you over the weekend. Three articles about how bad hacking can get. The first article is from a few years ago. A tech reporter, great guy named Matt Honan, M-A-T-H-O-N-A-N. He was at Wired at the time, and his life got hacked because bad guys wanted his Twitter handle, which was three letters, at M-A-T. And they went to great lengths and completely destroyed the guy. He was able to get everything back, but he's wrote a series of wonderful articles on Wired about all of this. And his, by the way, bottom line is, if I had had two-factor authentication on, none of this would have happened. So that's a great starting point. Then another article from Fusion, written by Kevin Roos, R-O-O-S-E, I think it was about a year ago. He asked two hackers, I think he was at DEF CON last year, he went to two hackers and said, hack me. Made a great TV piece for Fusion, but he also, you can watch the piece or you can read the article. Even though he knew they were going to try to hack him, he completely fell for it. It demonstrates the techniques and lengths hackers can go to get into your accounts. The article begins with, I was at my computer one night and a voice came out of it saying, you look kind of bored. Imagine how you would feel. You would jump, wouldn't you? Well, he did. That was one of the bad guys. The other hacker used social engineering to hack him, not code, not exploits. And the social engineering was pretty scary, too, because the problem is customer service reps take their first two words in their name seriously, customer service. And if you can effectively convince them that you are the customer, they will give up the keys to the kingdom. So that's called social engineering. When a hacker calls up and, you know, my husband just left town, and she's playing an audio recording of a baby crying in the background, I have to get into his account. You got to give me the password. And the customer service representative said, oh, you poor woman, of course, here, let me give you the password. It's worth reading, Kevin Roos. Finally, we'll put a extra credit article in there if you really want to learn more. This was, I think, from last year also, by a Dutch newspaper called The Correspondent, in which they talk about what a Wi-Fi hacker can do in an open access point, what a Wi-Fi hacker can do to you. Using simple, easily affordable tools available on the internet, like the Wi-Fi Pineapple, that's a hacker tool of choice. And it's scary, too. And I don't tell you these things to scare you, but I tell you them to you so that you will take appropriate and, frankly, fairly easy precautions. Number one, turn on two-factor authentication. Really makes a difference. And I'm sorry that Clinton had that happen to him. That's just terrible. Kathy, Ventura, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have a question for you regarding cell phones. I have an extremely old Samsung. I think it's a Proclaim. Is
that I know. You know, there are a lot of less than flagship phones that are fairly inexpensive that are sold in cell phone stores with weird names, and they're generally kind of out-of-date Android phones. So I'm going to assume the Proclaim is that.
Yeah, I bought this in 2012, I think.
Yeah.
So I finally decided I was going to upgrade. Well,
by the way, I understand why people buy these. The flagship phones are, you know, close to $1,000. They're very expensive.
Yeah, that's crazy. I wanted a Galaxy S8, and I think the best price I found on that was like $850.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm not going to pay that.
No, I don't blame you.
So I don't really use it all that much. So I thought, well, that's a lot more than what I need. I wanted something with a decent camera. So I went on eBay, and I found a brand new S6 for less than $200.
Not a bad idea. They get the previous version, or in this case, 2 years previous version. Often they're very inexpensive. And, you know, you get many of the benefits. The only caution is that on Android, older phones don't get the latest updates. And I don't care if you get the latest feature updates of, you know, Android Nougat, the current version of Android. But I do care if you get the security patches. Because what happens is, just like with Windows, they patch holes in the operating system, and there are many in Android. And as soon as they do, the bad guys go, oh, look at that. And they start exploiting them, and it just makes you vulnerable. Now, I say that, and at the same time, I have to point out, I don't know anybody's ever had a phone been hacked. It's just that if it were to be hacked, that would be a disaster.
Yeah, I'm guessing maybe there's a way to go on Samsung or whatever. And
well, if you really want to get geeky, you can always get an S6, then go to a website called XDA Developers, xda-developers.com, and find out how to take that older phone and update it to a newer version of Android, which is not a bad idea.
Okay. Well, that kind of leads into my...
Before you go on, did you buy the S6?
I did.
Okay. So I won't say anything else then.
The reason I bought it was because I have a friend who loves the Galaxy.
I think they're great.
She said she hated her S7 or so, I thought, but what turned out, she hated her S6, so I'm in trouble.
Well, no, the S6 was quite good. Quite good. That was I'll tell you what, the S5 was awful. And I know a lot of owners of S5s are going to say, what? But really, I didn't recommend it. But the S6 was a breakthrough. And the S7 and 8 have followed closely in the footsteps of the S6. So you got a good one. It's just a little out of date.
Yeah, I think for my intents and purposes, it'll probably be just fine.
Generally, what I tell people for others listening who haven't spent the money already is there are good, inexpensive phones from Motorola and other companies. The Moto G is $200, same price, but it's new. And it's got the latest version of Android on it. And so it's won't have all – I mean, you've got on the S6 a brilliant camera. Today, even today, 2 years later, it's still one of the best cameras ever.
Yeah, I took a picture the other day. I was like, oh, this is
– I great. Know. I was blown away when I got the S6. I was like, I went and took it's, and it's still very, very good. It's right. I mean, they haven't made huge strides since then. So,
my burning question for you, I have two, if I can remember them both, showing my age. The first one was, I'm hoping that I can figure out a way to transfer over my photos and contacts.
Yes.
From this old phone to the new one.
Yes. I presume the old phone is logged into your Google account, right? Is the Proclaim an Android phone?
Yes.
Okay. So tie it to your Google account, log in, and then sync to Google Contacts, Google Calendar, and Google Photos from that old Proclaim. Everything will be on your Google account, and when you log into that Google account on your Samsung Galaxy S6, it all just sucks it right in.
Oh.
It's why we no longer have... Thank goodness. Remember you used to have to type in all the phone numbers when you got a new phone? Don't have to do that anymore. So Google is your best friend in this respect. That's one of the great things about Android. And by the way, Apple phones do the same thing with Android or Apple's iCloud. Is use the cloud. Store everything on the cloud. You can even do it retroactively on the Proclaim. And then it will be available when you log in to your Google account on your new phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on just a sec. Don't go away. I just had a break for a commercial.
But
did that help you? Does that make sense?
Thank you. I appreciate it. And there was one other thing, and now I can't think of it.
I'm sure that Proclaim is, I mean, usually when you get an Android phone, it says, well, what's your Google account? And you log in. But you can go into the settings there and make sure that under, I think it's reset. I can't remember, but under, I think the reset setting, there is a checkbox to back up to Google. That'll back up a lot of your stuff.
Okay, yeah, because that was one thing is, although the pictures aren't great, some of them are like, oh.
No, you don't want to lose them. And in fact, from now on, install Google Photos. It comes on your Samsung, but Samsung also has its own gallery program. Don't use that, because then you can sync with Samsung, but what good is that? You don't want to always have to buy a Samsung phone.
Right.
Sync with Google. And your photos will be on the web. Even if you lose that phone, you haven't lost a picture. When you take a picture, it's automatically uploaded. That's the way to go with photos, for sure.
Yep, that's perfect.
Yep. That's called Google Photos, and it's a free app, and it's free to upload, which is really nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So now I'm gonna be more on my phone, I think, now that I have a fun phone.
I think you're going to love that phone. And then the next step is next year you're going to spend $800 on a phone because you're going to go, well, I love this. I need more of this.
Probably. Now I'm in. They got me.
And that's why we do it, because it ends up being the computer you use all the time. Your smartphone ends up being your computer, especially these newer, bigger screen phones. It's just everything. It's always online. It's you do everything in it. And so I think when initially people go, well, I'm coming from a normal smartphone. Why would I want to spend $800 on a phone? Well, because it's your main computer, then it starts to make sense. And your main camera and your main audio device, as you listen to music on it. It's your iPod, it's your pick camera, it's your email. It becomes everything, and then the price is not quite so crazy.
Right, yes. Just for a phone that I don't use very much, that was like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, because people are coming from that, the old phones that you didn't really care about. I don't know, maybe this won't happen to you, but I bet you'll go, oh, this is great.
So now I just need to keep my boss from knowing I got a new phone.
Shh, don't tell your
boss. I told him I'm not on it very often.
Oh, yeah, I can't use that. Don't call me.
Well, thank you for your help.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for listening.
Have a good afternoon.
Okay, Kathy. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye. So my Lenovo T470S... i7-7600. It's got a 14-inch non-touch 1080p screen because I'm going to put free BSD on it, right? It's got 24 gigs of RAM, DDR3 RAM. Nope, DDR4 RAM. Intel graphics. That's okay, I think, for free BSD, right? I don't want the NVIDIA stuff. Great keyboard, no fingerprint reader because those typically don't work with BSD. I might have to just enter a password. I'm a little worried about the NVMe PCIe solid-state drive. A little worried about that. I have NVMe on this thing, and it's always been finicky with it. It's one of the reasons I can do free BSD. Oh, and like 18-hour battery life because I got the big extra bigs. I got lots of battery. Sucker. But it's got, it's got USB-C charging, which is awesome. So this is going to be, and it was cheap, relatively. It was 1500, 1480, something like that. Yeah, 1473. So this is going to be my BSD box. I'm so excited. This is Heather's song. Right, Heather?
Kind of.
This is from Portugal the Man, who is neither a man nor Portuguese.
They're from Portland.
Well, Portland's like Portugal. What's the name of this?
Feel It Still.
Feel It Still. I do like it.
Yeah. Rebel Just for Kicks.
I got two musical directors now. Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. She's working hand in hand. Fist in glove with Michael Cozio, our musical director, to spin the tunes on the Tech Guy Show. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number, 888-827-5536. Steve on the line in Murrieta, California. Hi, Steve. Thanks for
hanging on. How you doing, Leo?
Thanks. I'm well.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, I'm having a communication problem. I've got an HP desktop that I've had for probably close to 5 years now. It's an AMD, it's a 6-something series. And I've got an HP LaserJet. It's probably about the same age, about 5 years, a 3005, pretty, fast LaserJet. And I've held off on putting Windows 10 on this thing, and about a year ago it just automatically did it somehow, overnight, I think, and I've kind of been having communication issues with the IP address on the LaserJet changing, and I have to go into printers, device settings.
It changes, huh? So it's different at different times. That's interesting.
Yeah. And
it's Wi-Fi, right? It's not wired?
No, it is wired. That's the thing.
And it's wired into a router, into your router?
Well, I've got it's wired into the router.
Okay. So for some reason, it's renewing the connection through the router, and for some reason, the router is giving it a different number. Routers don't guarantee the IP address of a device inside your network, but you can do two things to lock it down, which is, of course, what you probably want to do. It depends on how your HP is set up. You know, it is possible to set up a printer to print to an IP address, or a computer to print to an IP address. More typically, it'll use zero config, Apple calls it Bonjour, to discover the printer on the network and print to wherever it is. So you have a few options here. One is to reconfigure the HP to not print to a specific IP address. Go back and remove the printer from the printer settings. And when you set it up, don't search for it as an IP, but search for it on the Windows network. And it'll do it in a, by name as opposed to IP address. So that's one possibility. The other, and of course, you probably been doing this all along, and it never changed its address, so it didn't care. But all of a sudden, for some reason, the router has decided to reassign. The other thing you can do, in some routers, you can reserve IP addresses. You could say, this thing here should always be 192.168.1-100. Always.
Yeah.
And if failing all of that, your last ditch is to give a printer what we call a static IP address. In other words, you tell the printer, this is your address. Tell the router, that's its address, and it will never change. But that's the worst case scenario because you understand how the router works. It assigns addresses, and when you use a static address, you always run the risk there'll be an IP address collision. Only one and only one device on your network can have that address; otherwise, everything stops working.
Yeah, I've tried multiple things. I've gone into settings. I've deleted the printer from the Windows and reinstalled it and. On the static IP address or the search by name, because when I do that and I plug everything back in, I'll reboot the printer. It doesn't recognize it on the network initially, and then sometimes I will, when I redo all this, it will recognize it, and I go in. The printer's on the icon, under the printer devices, but then it'll show the printer is offline.
God, printers are just a nightmare.
I'm almost thinking of getting a wireless printer because I've got another HP all-in-one inkjet, and that's wireless. I don't have any problems with that because it, it can easily recognize the IP address and reconnect to it, So I didn't know if it was a compatibility issue with Windows 10 or because...
Yeah, I don't think it is. It sounds like for some reason the router's decided to change addresses on that printer. Windows 10 should be able to find the printer... not by IP address, but by some other means. So you might try when you add it not to search for the printer by IP address, but to kind of go out and scout the network. You're using a technology Microsoft actually created. Apple has adopted. Apple called it Rendezvous for a while. It's now called Bonjour, which is even worse. Windows calls it Zero Config. And the whole point is that you don't know, and none of this can be known. So the computer, when you turn it on, should just go say, well, anybody out there, a printer? Oh, yeah, you're a printer? Okay, I'll work with you. Yeah. There may be other system issues going on. I also would look at firmware on that printer and make sure you have the latest.
Yeah, I did that. I just did that last week. Yeah. I updated the firmware.
Sounds like you know what you're doing.
I'm going to either do a full factory reset on the computer and see with that, or I'm just going to get a new desktop and possibly a new version.
This kind of thing drives you crazy. Yeah. If you've ever worked in IT, this is the worst problem, the call you don't want to get. My printer's not working. And it's just, there's so many, I think it's just a very fragile ecosystem.
It seems to be, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I think things like resetting Windows or buying a new computer or printer are not the right answer. You just got to figure out why this is going on and try to figure it out. It's a baffling thing to me. I don't know.
Yeah, I went to some of the tech stores, and they don't know. We'll bring the computer in, and I'm not going to do that.
What router? How old is the router? Is it and what kind of router do you use?
Well, I was using I had Verizon. The DSL, because I don't have Fios where I'm at.
So you were using the Verizon's provided router?
Yeah.
Yeah, those ActionTech routers are terrible.
Yeah.
So it could be that.
It worked, it worked for years. I mean, and then it just all of a sudden, last year,
this is one thing.
All these issues.
People, we've only recently kind of started saying this, but for a long time, a router was like your television set. You'd buy it and you won't get another one for 10 years, right? Well, that's all changed, both in TVs and in routers. And newer routers, whether it's Wi-Fi or not, it's not a bad idea every few years to get a new router, even a wired router. I think, I don't know, I don't have to ask an expert, but I think they get tired. They're really little computers, right? That's all a router is. Got a little memory, little operating system and firmware, processor, and all this data is going through it all day. If you feel it, they can get pretty hot, and I just feel like they, after a while, they wear out. I know it's kind of hard to think of something with no moving parts as wearing out, but this seems to be what happens. So the first thing, if you're going to replace anything, and even before you reset Windows, is maybe get a new router. Certainly update the router firmware. I think that's a good idea. I'm not sure what's going on. And I don't know if I want to spend too much time down this rabbit hole. You can. That's why IT people hate this call. Just restart the printer and restart the computer 3 times. Stand on one leg and spin around 4 times. And then go to lunch and see when you come back what happens, and call somebody else if it's not working. Thank you. Goodbye. I won't do that to you. It does feel like there's a little bit of voodoo in the chat room saying, well, maybe it's a power supply issue. Maybe you got a bad Ethernet cable. I can go on and on and on. And truthfully, it could be any number of things. Edit the config.sys, says KC8RLU. How's your auto exit? Remember those? Autoexit.bat? Config.sys? None of that's on Windows 10. You don't really even have a command line, do you, on Windows? I mean, you can get to it, but it's simulated. There's no DOS in there. 8888 Ask Leo. Website techguylabs.com. The Gizwiz coming up next. It's a windsock error. You need a new TCP stack. Gizmos and gadgets and gadgets and gizmos. He's the Gizwiz. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How are you?
I am well.
Good. Are you going away again, right?
Again. Again, yes, I'm going away again. So okay. September 14th through the 28th, we'll be in France.
Oh, great, okay. All right, so then France. We'll do like one extra spot.
I'm going to pre-record 2 weekends, so we'll do 2 extra spots.
Oh, 2 extra spots.
I'm going to miss 3 weekends, and then Scott and Jason are going to take the 3rd weekend. So you can do that one live. But the first 2 weekends, which is like the 17th and 24th, we will be recording. And we're going to do that. I guess they sent you an email. That must be why.
No, they didn't.
Oh, we'll be doing that soon.
Okay.
Well, sometime in the next 2 months.
Oh, sure. Oh, okay.
Soon-ish. 6 weeks. We got six
Soon-ish.
Weeks.
Soon-ish.
Yeah, okay. We'll probably start pre-recording next week.
Oh, very good.
And then I'm so excited. Henry, my son, and Henry graduates. He graduated in June, but he still had one more class. So when he finishes at the last class, I said, all right, anywhere in the world you want to go, I'll take you. Because we used to, remember, Henry and I used to travel. He was my travel buddy. We've been all over the world together.
Right.
So we're going to do, because you know, now my latest thing, I was into the trawler, right? But now I'm thinking I should get a catamaran, because I don't want to be beholden to the oil stuff. I mean, they got a little engine, but if I could sail, and a cat's pretty easy to sail, and it's very stable, right?
Yeah, super stable.
And lots of room, right?
Yep, you can put Henry down in one side of one catamaran, wouldn't even see him.
I'm taking the first steps. Henry and I are going to go on to the Caribbean. We're getting a skipper, though, to do a catamaran sail around the Caribbean. That's going to be after Christmas, the 22nd through the 29th of December.
Oh, okay.
So that won't impact, because I don't think we'll do a show Christmas Eve or the third day, Christmas Eve. So, but I thought if I do this, and we got a skipper, but I'm going to have him kind of show me the ropes, literally,
the lines,
or as you guys say, the lines. And this is a 48-foot catamaran, so it's pretty big.
Nice.
Yeah. But cats are cheap, I found. Compared to trawlers, a used catamaran is cheap. The trawlers I was looking at, some of them were almost $1 million.
Yeah.
But you can get a decent-sized catamaran for
because
less than
a catamaran
half.
Is usually all on one level, and a trawler, you
right.
got, like,
right. You got, downstairs. You know, the yeah. beds are in the hulls.
Yep.
And there's lots of storage. And then you have the platform is where the living, you know, the saloon and the kitchen are. And they look great. So I think that might, and that way I can use a sail and I won't feel so bad about.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, I hear.
I know you're a power boater.
No, I've nothing against catamarans.
I don't think cats are as hard to sail as single hull. Sailboats. I've sailed. I mean, I have sailed. I know how to sail, but
right. The only thing is docking is you need
it. Yeah, nobody wants a big white cat, but you can anchor, and because they have a very shallow draft, you can anchor in places that a trawler can't anchor in. I mean, you have almost zero. Your draft is like 2 feet, so you can go in a lot. So that's I've been reading up on it.
And it sounds like. Yeah. And then you'll have a little inflatable dink to go
you
into
get a dinghy,
town.
And they come right off the back, and you've got a swim yep. platform and everything. It's kind of seems like a better liveaboard than a trawler. I still want a Nordhavn, but, you know, can't afford that. Now, this is a good techie theme. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Beep, beep, boop, 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 boop. And along with Leo Laporte, here he is. They call him the Gizwiz, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer for 51 years. Is that right? Am I making that
up? Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
I don't keep track. It's more than definitely more than 50 years.
A long darn time, but he started in high school, so that's why. Yeah. And he's also, we call him the Gizwiz because he's like a gadget fiend, a wizard of gizmos. And he joins us each week with a gizmo.
A couple of weeks ago, there was CE Week here in New York City, a mini event put on by the CES people. And I found this device. Now, I don't have it, and I'm just going on the demo that they gave me. But it's called Kids Connect, and it's a digital phone for the really young, like down around 4 years old.
Okay. Really?
But, Leah... Okay, so it's a digital phone with four numbers. Those are the only four numbers.
Yeah.
The only four numbers the kid can dial.
Yeah. So it's got buttons on it that just say 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Four. Okay. The SOS button will send text messages to those four people with where the child is.
Oh, I love that.
Okay.
Oh, this is a good idea.
You there, and I said to the guy, what does this sell for? And he said, $80. I said, well, that's okay.
What's
and
the
I
looked plan on cost?
Leo, the plan is $13 or $17.
A month.
Well, I don't think that it's
that bad.
No, that's
not. Bad, you know right? what, for a kid? And that in the higher cost is just more talk minutes, which you don't really care about, right?
No, and if you want to know where the kid is, you push the location button.
Oh,
and
no, really? It tells you? It's like a little GPS on your kid.
Yes, and if the phone doesn't answer, you push another button, the parent, and it turns on the microphone in the phone.
Hey, so that Joey, where are you?
Yes.
I love
this. So you can hear the surroundings of where the kid is now, and maybe why he's not answering the phone.
When my son Henry was about 9 or 10... He wanted a phone. I wasn't going to get him a phone. So I got him I think it was called a Firefly. It was a kid's phone, which he...
Yes.
Yeah, he had for about 5 minutes, then left it in his jeans and threw him in the wash, and that was the end of the Firefly. And I think he didn't really want... He wanted a real phone. But this is for littler kids.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And that you want to keep track of, you can...
I think this is a good idea. This is a good safety
and you can have
thing.
Yeah, geofencing, so you can say, you know, you want the phone to alert you if the kid goes out of an area that you've pre-selected.
But Dick, how do I use Twitter and Facebook on this?
You ain't, pal.
What about what a tweet? I want a tweet. No tweeting?
No tweeting.
Uncle Dick, I want a tweet.
The tweet is that you're getting this phone now. Shut up.
This is your tweet. Okay. Okay, I'll just tweet with Sally's phone. She's got an iPhone 7.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll make sure. Make sure tell your parents that you want number 4 to be Sally.
But they don't really need 4 buttons, frankly. You know, a parent and a grandparent maybe, but it's good to have 4, I guess.
Yeah, why not?
You don't want to be like calling their girlfriend on this thing. This is for like 4-year-olds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's to tide them over until they will not accept anything but an iPhone.
I'm going to have mommy be one phone, daddy be another number. I'm going to have Aunt Judy be another number. And I want a bookie on the 4th number. Can I put my bookie, because I got to lay down some bets.
Oh, on mine I have PayPal as the 4th. And strangely, it's your PayPal account.
I got to call my bookie.
Okay, so there it's at mykidsconnect.com. I think this is a great idea. You know, kids, even these little kids now are saying, I want a phone.
Yeah.
But this isn't really about giving the kid a phone. This is about keeping an eye on the kid.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. There you go.
Keep an eye on this guy. He's trouble. Go to gizwiz.biz to keep an eye on what Dick's up to, his appearances on this show, World News Now, many other shows, all the gadgets he mentions on those shows. And while you're there at gizwiz.biz, you could play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is identify a close-up picture of some gizmo or gadget. Not as easy as it sounds, but the good news is there's more prizes for the wrong answer than there are for the right answer. Just a
few things in life pay off like
reward error like you do. But it's got to be a clever error. Yes. All right, Dickie D. And don't forget podcast, buddy. Monday. What is it? When do you do it? Wednesday? Thursday?
Oh, we do it. We normally do it Thursdays. We're doing it Wednesday this week, but normally Thursdays.
That's, of course, the great GizWiz podcast at gizwiz.tv. Does that with Chad Johnson. Thank you so much, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
I'll talk to you
next week and see what if you've changed to a submarine.
Yeah. I got mommy on one number. I got daddy on another number. Got my bookie on the 3rd number. I only get 4 numbers.
I was going to give out the phone number. I don't think I need to because this is about it. Paul in Long Beach. I think you're going to be our last call of the day. Hi, Paul.
Well, hi. How are you?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
I have, in 2009, I bought a desktop Mac for myself. I'm visually impaired, and it works just fine. And in 2010, 5 months after I bought it, it crashed. Oh. Apple replaced it for free.
Good.
And when I go to the little Apple in the upper left-hand corner, it says that was made in late 2009, early 2010, and I've only used about 20% of the memory or in the hard drive. And it works just fine. I do every update that Apple sends to me.
Okay, good. So even though it's 8 years old, what is the latest version of Mac OS you have on there?
Hold on a second.
Because that's the one, that's where you're going to start to feel left behind. I think something that old, you're probably at Mac OS 10.8 or 7. The current version is 10.10. And there's a new version coming out in a couple of months.
I'm at 10.12.6.
Oh, you're golden. As long as you can. So that's what will happen is at some point Apple will say, sorry, you can't have the latest version of Mac OS. And that then starts becoming a problem with security and some software won't work. But if you're I take it back, 10.12 is the latest version. If you're at 10.12, you're golden. You're good.
So I don't need to worry about my machine.
No, I don't see any reason. As long as it's working and the speed's good for you, I'd say you're in great shape. What's happened, you know, in the early days of computing, every year you doubled in speed and performance and new features, but it's slowed down considerably. So nowadays, an 8-year-old computer, while old, as long as it's operating properly and can still run the latest operating system and software, is fine. It's not much slower than today's computers.
Yeah, I called Apple, tech support.
Yeah.
At Apple, and they told me, the fellow there told me about 3 weeks ago, he said, you know, you've only used about 21% from what you're telling me.
He said, and you're not overloading your machine, and if you can, you just download it.
Good on them. Good on them. I love that they didn't try to sell you. That's awesome. I've never heard of a company not, I mean, this is an opportunity for them to make a sale, and they didn't. And they're right.
He didn't. He said, keep your machine.
Keep your machine, and I agree. If it, you know, the hard drive is the one thing that's going to fail, but that's an easily and inexpensively replaced part. Anything with moving parts wears out faster than the rest of it. As long as it's still operating to your, you know, acceptably to you, keep it. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.